Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
4:09 in Sports Saturday. Steve, Eric, Jonathan, Sloan Martin in the newsroom today. We got a game underway in the NFL. Kind of like these Saturday games when college football, you have these just totally meaningless bowl games going on right now. There is one game of meaning, however, and this is the FCS semifinals. Eastern Washington, well on their way, leading Maine 50-19. And it looks like the team that plays on the red rug will head down to Texas to take on North Dakota State as the Bison rolled over their rivals from South Dakota State, the Jacks. I caught part of that game last night. North Dakota State had it well in control.
And once again, North Dakota State will play for another FBS championship. So that's pretty much what they do in Fargo. It's how they roll, and they've got a head coaching change coming up.
Yeah, and you brought it up during the break, and it's a great point. This is now a legit stepping stone to Division I Power 5 conferences. And you saw their current coach take the job at Kansas State. Before that, now granted, it's not a Power 5 job, but the previous coach got a job out at Wyoming.
Yeah, Craig Bohl. I think anybody who follows college football knows that if you go to North Dakota State and keep the ball rolling, which is what Klieman did, replacing Bohl, that you will be on the radar to become a D1 head coach if that's your goal. So to me, North Dakota State has become what Boise State has also become, even though Boise State is an actual D1 team. Chris Peterson was fantastic there. Now he's with the Washington Huskies. They're going to the Rose Bowl. North Dakota State's legit, baby.
Now, the Bison have done this. They've built themselves into this program. But there have been other 1AA or FCS coaches that have made their way to Division I football. Mike London, who coached at Richmond, ended up coaching at Virginia. He didn't last a long time there, but he was there. You have Chip Kelly, who he did not coach necessarily as a head coach, but he jumped from New Hampshire to Oregon as the OC and eventually became the head coach. So there have been some ties. But yeah, North Dakota State's becoming the latest program to really jump people up to Division I.
Yeah, and what I was trying to say FBS. If you go to North Dakota State and have success and you want to move up one more rung on the coaching ladder, you will get that opportunity. And I think good luck to Chris Klieman down at K-State.
Now, is this the reason that P.J. Fleck was extended, or was there concern that P.J. Fleck could be on his way to Fargo? is that why they extended him another year to 2023?
Well, I don't know. It may have been Eric Kaler pulling a Governor Scott Walker play on his way out. He wanted to make sure that he validated his hire of P.J. Fleck.
Whoa.
I'll do what Governor Walker's doing.
Yeah. Hey, Eric. Bravo. Anytime you can get a shot in at the Wisconsin GOP, I love it.
That was a shot across the bow.
No,
wow.
Across the St. Croix.
That's a thing of beauty.
I did want to say one other thing. One other coach that we forget to mention rose all the way up from not FCS or Division II, but Division III, Lance Leopold over at Wisconsin Whitewater. Yep. He's now the head coach of Buffalo
Bulls.
And they should have won the MAC this year.
And quickly look this up, J-Lo. You're the guru of Google, the Google guru. Ron Earhart, once upon a time head coach of the New England Patriots. I believe he was a North Dakota State coach at one time. We'll have to double check that. Ron Earhart.
But the step that was made by Klieman to
K-State.
I mean, that's a jump to a Power 5. You know, with all due respect to Wyoming and Buffalo and some of these other jobs, I mean, this is a jump. And he's taking over for a legend in Bill Snyder, who's had a lot of success at K-State over the years. So that's a plum of a job for a guy making a jump from there to the Power Five conference.
I will say this, though. Kansas State is it's a good program. I wouldn't put it up there as always going from North Dakota State to Alabama.
No.
But it is.
Nobody would.
No, it is going to be interesting to see how he now has, and interesting to see how Kansas State handled this with their cross-state rivals, if you will, their couple-hour-away rivals, Kansas, hiring Les Miles as their head coach. That's going to be a very interesting interstate rivalry, depending on how long both of those guys last.
Well, if Les Miles can fix it at Kansas, more power to him.
He'll get a lifetime contract extension from the people at Kansas. And I'll say this, too, about Klieman. And I had him on earlier in the season during one of the nights I was in for Maxey. He and Craig Bull have found a way to come down here to the Twin Cities and get a lot of kids out of this market. This is a valuable recruiting area, Twin Cities, state of Minnesota. So if you look at Fargo, and then you look at where he's going, Manhattan, Kansas, that's a very rural setting. And I think he's going to face the same challenges there in recruiting that he did at Fargo. And this is no knock at Fargo-Moorhead. Believe me, it's not. But if you can get kids to go to Fargo-Moorhead, I think you can get them to go to Manhattan, Kansas.
Yeah.
It's a similar type situation.
And playing in the Big 12, you got Kansas City close by, you got Wichita close by, you got St. Louis fairly close by. They can go into Texas to recruit because you do have multiple teams in that league in Texas, so you can keep a lot of those kids going back home for games there. So they have items that they can pull from. They have regions they can pull from. It'll be interesting to see how Klieman does with that regional type of recruiting. By the way, Eric was correct. Ron Earhart, the coach of North Dakota State, according to Wikipedia, by the way, the coach of North Dakota State from 1966 to 1972 jumped directly from that to being the running backs coach at New England.
Yes.
That's a heck of a jump.
It is. And let me take it a step further. Our good friend Joel Ripple over at the Minneapolis Star Tribune, who for many years took care of Sid's column, he's listening. He said Ron Earhart coached North Dakota State from 1966 to 72. And then he's pointed out, and Stevie T, you're going to like this one, and you may already know this. Augustana University in South Dakota will pursue a move to NCAA Division I athletics. So that's an interesting decision. And I wonder if down U.S. Highway 169 in Mankato, they're going to do the same thing someday.
I highly doubt it. Because one thing that's fueling that Augustana move in Sioux Falls is a ton of Sanford Health money is coming into that.
Remember, Glenn Taylor likes Minnesota State.
But you've got a problem because it's a state school. Then you also have UMD and you have St. Cloud State. I just don't think there's any appetite among those institutions to take all their athletic programs to Division I. They already have Division I hockey for men and women at Minnesota State, at St. Cloud, and at UMD. So there is a Division I component there. Here's the thing. Augustana in Sioux Falls, and what I know about it, right now has another school called the University of Sioux Falls that has found a way to beat them consistently in football in their key to the city game. So Sanford Health money flowed into Augustana to make that jump to put them on par with the University of South Dakota and South Dakota State up the road in Brookings. So it's kind of a competition of one-upmanship, if you will. And I don't know how Augustana is going to do it. If you look up the student population, it's not a big school. And for them trying to compete at the Division I level, it's going to be very difficult. South Dakota State and, for instance, the University of South Dakota are much larger public institutions with much larger student populations. It's going to be a big challenge for Augie, for sure.
Yeah, and I'm not disagreeing with you. And Joel, again, Joel Ripple, Minneapolis Star Tribune, what he is saying is that Augustana hopes to secure an invitation to a D1 conference by the 2021/22 academic year. They last explored this 12 years ago, and as you pointed out, Stevie T, South Dakota State and North Dakota State moved to D1 back then. Since then, the University of South Dakota and the University of North Dakota have followed suit. So stay tuned. It's getting interesting here in the Upper Midwest. that could add a new wrinkle to college football final.
I would really be interested in seeing, taking it out of South Dakota and bringing it back to Minnesota. Would North, would Mankato, would St. Cloud State, would Minnesota Duluth jump to Division I in sports? Not necessarily to the FBS in football. They could still maybe do the FCS, but with all the other sports. Because, yeah, they have hockey up here, but that's it. I come from a state where there's only one football FBS team, the University of Missouri. But you've got three or four others that they don't play FBS football, but all of their other sports are Division I. University of Missouri, Kansas City, St. Louis University, Southeast Missouri State, Missouri State down in Springfield. It would be an interesting concept to see if Mankato State, if Duluth would come up, maybe just leave football at the FCS level and play all their other games, their other sports at Division I.
All the people I have talked to over the years, there is no appetite whatsoever for the Minnesota State schools. And you got to throw Winona State. They have a big student population at Winona State. So you have Winona State, you have Minnesota State, St. Cloud State, and UMD. And maybe, don't forget Bemidji State as well.
Bemidji State, Moorhead.
You've got Minnesota State, Moorhead. You know, you've got a big state school component, and they're happy with the Northern Sun. Now, getting back to the Northern Sun as a conference, there are some schools that are having a hard time competing in the Northern Sun. Minnesota Crookston comes to mind. If you think football, you've got Minot in there. You've got the University of Mary that don't fare very well. I think there could be and should be some changes to the structure of the Northern Sun. I think those schools should maybe look at other conferences. But as far as Augustana making that jump to Division I, all I can say, good luck. I don't think it's going to be easy with a student population that small to make that jump to Division I in football. In the other sports, sure. Augustana has shown that they can compete in men's and women's hoops, for example. They won a national championship not that long ago in D2. It's much easier to compete. You can have a much smaller school. Football is a whole different ballgame.
Well, and the numbers are 1,563 undergrads at Augustana. It would be one of the smallest D1 athletic programs if they jumped. Now, my thing on Minnesota State, Mankato, would be maybe you do it on your own. I've heard rumblings down there that they've at least thought about it. It's certainly a facilities issue in football. You would have to upgrade a stadium, get to at least 15 to 20,000. Could they do it? Do they have the boosters and the funding? They have a basketball/hockey venue that would work, the Taylor Center. But I'm just telling you, I've heard rumblings from people down there that maybe it's something they would explore.
Here's where you might get a boon, talking football-wise, if they go to FCS. You play these away games with FBS opponents. You know, Mankato may have a game at Minnesota. They may have a game at Iowa. They may have a game at Wisconsin. They may have a game at Iowa State. Those are paydays. Those can help.
Well, here's another thing that could help is you're getting to a critical mass where you could see a reforming of sorts of the old North Central Conference. And I remember doing games, ball games on the radio in the old North Central Conference. North Dakota State, North Dakota, South Dakota State, South Dakota. Augustana was a part of that league. You had St. Cloud. You had Mankato, Minnesota State, as a part of that. If you get enough to the point where, because right now they're playing in the Missouri Valley Football Conference, they're playing in the Summit in Hoops, you might get to the critical mass where you'd have enough Division I schools in this region to form a conference that not only could have football, but could have all these other sports, volleyball, men's and women's hoops, softball, baseball, those types of programs, then I could see, and why not, you know, reform the North Central Conference. But I still think we're a long way
away. Well, I agree, but I will say this. When you look at the state of Minnesota, it's one of the very few states in the nation with only one D1 basketball and football program. It's the University of Minnesota, and it's been that way forever and a day. Even the Dakotas, you've got a couple. I remember Northern Colorado once upon a time played in the old NCC, and they were Division II. They bumped up to Division I along
with
North Dakota.
I made the trip out there.
Yeah, Greeley. I've been to Greeley before. The Broncos used to train there.
Yeah, Omaha was part of that league.
Don't drive by the Montfort packing plant on U.S. Highway 34 because, well, first of all, you'll smell it about 30 miles out. Yeah. It's the guy that used to own the Colorado Rockies.
Yeah, I just think that, you know, a bigger conversation, we could talk about this all day. What is the value in going Division I? What does it bring to your school over playing in a great Division II league like they do right now in the Northern Sun? I'm not sure what there is to gain for Augustana. Quick break, 424 here at CCO. 427, a heated argument developing in studio. You know, we should have the on-air version, and then we should have, like, the online. No, I'm
outtakes.
About
we
that.
Need to do outtakes like they do in the sitcoms.
You don't want to live stream us during the breaks. No, you don't want to live stream.
You haymakers were throwing.
Let's just get back to an important point of all of this. And this I'm not convinced about. If I am the president or sit on the board of regents at a college or a university, and I love sports. I've been around sports my entire life. I love sports. I like college sports. What is gain? You guys brought it up during the break. Exposure. Let's use Augustana in Sioux Falls, who are making this big push. They've got money behind them now, Sanford Health money, I believe, behind them in this push to go Division I. Beyond exposure and getting to the next level, that's it? That's it?
I think,
mean, what bring to the academic institution? Does it build new laboratories? Does it create new academic programs? Or are you going to be putting so much of your money into recruiting and bringing in athletics and creating an athlete's village, for example? Is that the mission of what Augustana University is all about? Is it now athletics are now the most important thing? And it's a great school. I have a niece that graduated. She's an educator. Great school. Augustana is a wonderful school. My oldest daughter considered going there and made a visit to Augustana. But now does it become so much about being D1 in volleyball and D1 in, what exactly does that mean?
Oh, it's all about exposure. It's all about putting yourself on the map. It's all about seeing if you can compete at the next level against D1 schools. And sure, there's some ego involved, no doubt about it. But I think some people feel like, all right, if you're D1, if you get more television time, if you're written about more in newspapers or online, or you're talked about more on sports shows, maybe that will help you get students to come there who want to be a part of a Division I program.
But are some of these low-rung Division I programs getting time on ESPN? I don't think so. Now, you're getting a little TV time for North Dakota State, and they win. How many titles have they won? But what about all those other Division I programs that play in the Missouri Valley? Are they getting time on ESPN? Are they getting time on ESPN2 most of the time? Absolutely not, they aren't. You see the Summit League tournament from Sioux Falls. They do a great job at the Denny. But how many of those programs are getting that much more exposure? Is it that much more valuable for these institutions to go D1 and be flying their student-athletes all around the country and taking on all these additional expenses? I just don't see the value in general in going. I just don't know what going D1 brings to the table.
I'll say this. I think the big albatross in this is football. It's the one albatross. It's been the one albatross for decades. I think if you drop that, you see that there have been – how many basketball programs have gone D1 in the last 10 years? Probably, I'd say, maybe close to 20. You talk about schools like Northern Kentucky and Nebraska, Omaha, and some of these other ones. Like you said, South Dakota, North Dakota, South Dakota State, North Dakota State.
Yeah.
These programs were not Division I probably 20 years ago. And so with that one big albatross, football, being the main thing, the big cash cow or the big anchor, I think that's what it comes down to. I think if Augustana did not play football, I think this would be a non-story.
It'd be a moot point. Well, it all comes down to the vision you have And really the funding. Do you have a sugar daddy or a sugar mama who will help you either increase the capacity at your current venue or build a new one that's 15,000 to 25,000 seats minimum, create a situation where, hey, people want to go there. It's a cool place to watch a game. Have other events in there as well, not just 7 or 8 football games a season. And I do think exposure is a big part of it. And here in Minnesota, where we only have one Division I football, basketball program in the whole state, the U of M, I think there are some schools at least looking at it. St. Thomas, it's come up over there, and it always comes down to facilities. Well, I know this. With Allianz Field opening up in March, and we do know St. John's and St. Thomas will play a football game there next October.
And sell it out.
And sell it out. We'll have it here on WCCO. If the Tommies ever went to Division I to play football, they'd play at Allianz Field. I would stake my reputation on it.
But here's the difference. You bring up St. Thomas. How many undergrads are there at St. Thomas? Is it 5 digits? Is it 10 grand
now? They're global. They're everywhere.
No, what I'm saying is, though, on campus, I just don't think there's any comparison even between St. Thomas and Augustana.
Well,
as far as just the size of the school and the number of undergrads.
But, I mean, you look at some of these smaller Division I schools like a Duke, like a Northwestern. They don't have overwhelming populations of students. Northwestern has a fair amount, but Duke is fairly
small.
Notre
Dame's enrollment is only like 8,000.
Yeah.
Now, Notre Dame's a whole different story.
Right.
I get it. But you're bringing up a good point, J-Lo, that some of these schools don't have huge enrollments. But, again,
okay,
you have to have the vision.
Duke. This is Google. Almost 7,000 undergrads. But that's still a lot more than Augustana. I mean, it's their decision they have. It's like Penn State. Did you think 20 years ago Penn State would have hockey and Penn State getting hockey would create the Big Ten Hockey Conference? What did they have? They had someone willing to write
exactly
a check.
They had the folks that run the Buffalo Bills
the
Buffalo Sabres, Kim and Tom Pegula, and they wrote the check. And that goes back to what I said. Look, I don't think you go D1 just to say we're D1. You only do it if you have the roadmap and the ability to build a foundation and you have the sugar daddy or the sugar mama. Now, I know you don't like that idea, especially at a place like Augustana where they have roughly under 2,000 students on campus. But if you have a vision and you have somebody who can bankroll the thing, then it's possible. And I think it's human nature to always want to say, how would we do at the next level? Can we compete? Now, North Dakota State has blown things out of the water. They are the gold standard for teams making that conversion from D1 to, FBS. To me, they're the example. Now, can everybody have their kind of success? I don't know. They're also in a decent-sized metro area, Fargo-Moorhead. Look, there's more people living in the Fargo-Moorhead area than there is in Iowa City or West Lafayette or Champaign. So they have a fan base.
Good luck to them. Probably not what I would do. It's 4:35 here at CCO. 4:40, 20 minutes now in front of 5. More on the Vikes and the Dolphins to come here on the CCO. Spirited debate about the merits of Division One over Division Two, and you know I'm going to defend the Northern Sun and the MIAC and the WIAC. I am a fan of what Division Two and Division Three athletics still represent, and I think that's where I get to in all of this. That it's the attempt to get to Division One. What are you striving for? The corruption associated with big-time college athletics? Because you would be blind not to see that at the highest levels of football and men's basketball in particular, there's been a fair amount of corruption. There's been scandals over the years. There's a lot of money. There's a lot of influence from television and outside forces. And I think college athletics at its core is about student-athlete. Not athlete first. Student-athlete, and I still believe at the Division II and Division III level. Now, I'm not saying that, you know, there's blatant corruption in every Division I instance. Not saying that at all. I'm just saying, what are you striving for? You want to wade into that big money game and booster cash and television influence and media contracts and all of that sort of thing. That's all I'm getting at. There's something enjoyable about a St. John's St. Thomas rivalry game. Eric, you know, you did that game at Target Field a couple of seasons ago. Earlier this year, we're up at Clemens Stadium in Collegeville. That's, in my opinion, as good as it gets when it comes to college sports. Well, there's still some purity there.
I don't think that'll ever go away. I mean, you can get an Augustana trying to go D1. We've certainly seen the Dakota schools go D1. But there's always going to be Division II, always going to be Division III. NAIA is still out there on the map. So I don't think there's any fear that that will go away. I mean, I understand what you're saying because it is more pure at that level. I get that feeling. You know, at the end of a MIAC game, those teams might go out there and bang each other's brains out for 60 minutes, but when the game's over, they are hanging out. They're visiting with each other. I mean, there's really not much animosity in the MIAC like maybe you'd find in the Big Ten when Michigan State plays Michigan and Jim Harbaugh and Mike D'Antonio are basically throwing punches at each other. I mean, you know, almost. So, yes, I agree with you there. It's more pure. I don't think you have the corruption or the dirty pool that we see at the D1 level. But I do understand why some institutions would want to explore that avenue, and especially Augustana. They're looking around the landscape in the Dakotas and saying, well, okay, South Dakota State, South Dakota, North Dakota State, North Dakota, they've all done it. Maybe we can do it too. But at the end of the day, when you boil it down, it's revenue-driven. I don't think they are exploring this road unless they believe they can make more money.
Here's another point. Excuse me, Jonathan. Okay. What I know about Sioux Falls is this. I believe this decision has as much to do with the University of Sioux Falls, and in full disclosure, I have family members that have graduated on my wife's side from the University of Sioux Falls and Augustana. So everyone understand that. But I feel like that Augustana is concerned that the University of Sioux Falls is caught up. They've been able to beat them on the football field. They've been able to beat them in other endeavors. And I think this is a way for Augustana and the people that support and the boosters, et cetera, to maybe take a step beyond the University of Sioux Falls. Because when I was there doing their games, they were an NAIA institution. And they did make the leap to Division II. And people were like, wow, they're going to make the jump to Division II. And in general, in some sports, particularly football, they've done really well and have caught up to Augustana, and in some ways have been able to beat Augustana at the Division II level. So if you're just getting down to that, I think it's as much about that as anything, as one of, you know, being able to take a step beyond their rival and their neighbors. I mean, they're within a few blocks of each other right there in the middle of the city.
I want to go back to what you were saying about the feel that you have after a MIAC game, a WIAC game, a Northern Sun game. I'll say it this way, and I don't want to – it's going to sound like I'm going to degrade somebody or these schools that are at lower levels. I'm not trying to. I just – this is the way I feel about it. Athletics at a D2, a D3 level, an NAIA level, kind of feels like extended high school. Like you're extending high school out past senior year, past 18 years old. You have a familiarity with a lot of people. It's cliquish, but anyway, that's different. But when you go up to the highest level of Division I, FBS or Division I basketball, or some, maybe in some cases hockey, baseball, that feels more like a business.
It is a business.
So yeah. That's where I think you have you guys talk about the purity of it and the joy of playing on those levels. I think it's more like you have a different feel of what it is. You feel, you know, that there's a lot of business transactions and interactions at the Division I level, where at the Division III level, hardly any, if any, scholarships. You do have to go to class more often, and it's more regional. You're not taking all of these different trips around the country like Alabama football, Kentucky men's basketball, Connecticut women's basketball, Texas baseball, stuff like that. So there's a different feel to the camaraderie at those levels than there is at the Division One level a lot of times. That's just my thought on it.
I would also say this. It's analogous to minor league baseball to the show, the major leagues. I mean, I've gone to a lot of minor league games around the country. I see games at CHS Field during the summer, St. Paul Saints. Love it. Fabulous experience. I've seen minor league games in, you know, Indianapolis and Oklahoma City and some of these other AAA venues and Dayton, Ohio in the Midwest League. And I covered the Quad City Angels back in the day in the Midwest League. Those are all fun experiences. That's baseball at the grassroots level. But I think for the players at those levels, obviously they want to move up and go to the major leagues where they can get paid. So I think you can have a lot of fun in the minor leagues, but there's still that thrill of going to the highest level ever and seeing the top-tier athletes at whatever sport you're talking about play and see who's better. I mean, look what's happened in the state of Florida, and I realize that's a recruiting goldmine for football, but Central Florida and South Florida and Florida Atlantic and schools like that that, you know, 20, 30 years ago, they weren't on the map. Now they're relevant. I mean, my goodness, Central Florida's ahead of Florida State. So I think some of these schools, like Augustana, they may think, hey, we can someday be North Dakota State. We can someday do what they're doing. To get there, easier said than done. Yeah.
But I'll just get back to my earlier point. Is the lower levels of Division One, let's use men's or women's basketball, those conferences where the winner of the conference tournament gets an automatic bid, is it that much different? Is it really that much different? Is there that much more exposure in lower level Division One than there is, for instance, in Division Two? I'm just not so sure about that. I mean, there's the fantasy that you're going to be on SportsCenter tonight, but in reality, is that how it goes? I'm just not so sure about it.
We,
the Summit League doesn't have a television contract. The Big Ten Network, the Pac-12 Network, the SEC Network. These smaller conferences in Division I still don't have the television conferences and the cachet that the Power Five do. I just think, in a way, they're chasing their tail. They're chasing something that's not going to happen. The exposure they covet is not going to be there.
They'll get a chance for at least three games to be a body bag opponent, and they'll go play a D1 power or a Power 5 school, and they'll come back in a body bag with a big check, and that'll help bankroll the program as they try to build a foundation. Your exposure.
Isn't it wonderful? Hey, we're going to get into something else. Speaking of college sports, Blake Cashman, Golden Gopher linebacker, says no to the Quick Lane Bowl and will prepare for the combine. Eric's prepared for the combine. He has tickets in hand. He's ready to go, aren't you?
Oh, yeah. I was at the gym this morning. I thought I'd try to, you know, do some benching and jump around some cones.
No, but I mean, you're going to be there reporting on it.
Lucas
sure.
Oil, yeah. I'm going down station per diem. It's going to be awesome.
Quick break. We'll talk about that idea where more and more players are saying no to bowl games in order to prepare themselves for a chance at the NFL. That's coming up here on a Sports Saturday at CCO. 7 minutes now in front of 5 Sports Saturday. Steve, Eric, Jonathan hanging out. Wolves and Suns from Phoenix tonight. We brought it up earlier in the program. This is, on this trip, a must win for the Timberwolves. They got beat in Portland. They got beat by Golden State and then Sacramento. They got to get it done tonight. Our coverage begins at 7, tip 8 o'clock from the Valley of the Sun.
Yeah, the Phoenix Suns are 5-24, worst team record-wise in the NBA. They've only won 4 games at their home arena, Talking Stick Resort Arena. So if the Timberwolves are ever going to finally get a road victory in the Western Conference, it better be tonight against the sinking Suns. And the Wolves, by the way, on this current trip, 0-3. They are 2-11 on the road this season. So, I mean, all the numbers when they get away from the 6-1-2 are ugly. They have to win this game. I think psychologically if they lose, and you know better than anybody, a Phoenix to Minneapolis trip in the air is about 3 hours, maybe a little bit less if you get good tailwinds. That'll feel like a 10-hour journey if they lose this one. Tom Thibodeau might make them walk home.
Yeah. they got to get it done tonight, and we'll see if they can. Wolves return home. It'll be Sacramento on Monday, 7 o'clock, pregame 6:30. Detroit in on Wednesday, pregame 6:30. And then, of course, on the road to San Antonio on Friday night, with our coverage beginning at 7 o'clock. The game's all season long. Of course, John Folkey on the pregame stuff, Alan Horton with all the play-by-play here on CCO. One other tidbit, we talked a lot of college sports, D1 versus D2, et cetera. But Blake Cashman made news earlier in the week saying he would not play in the Quick Lane Bowl in Detroit, instead focusing on his preparations. And yeah, I think people have weighed in on this and saying, well, you know, he's got an obligation to his teammates. And in a case like this, playing an exhibition game in Detroit against Georgia Tech, what if he got injured? I can't blame kids for making this decision, and we've seen it. There are a number of instances where players have decided to skip bowl games, instead prepare for an opportunity to play in the NFL.
I think the guy who got it rolling was Christian McCaffrey a couple of years ago at Stanford, who had a fabulous career with the Cardinal, but he woke up one day, and probably upon advice from his father, Ed, who played with the Denver Broncos, and his mom was a great athlete, and maybe even the head coach, David Shaw, you never know. He decided it was in his best business interest to not play in a bowl game, risk injury. You have a brand. You want to be ready to go for the combine. The combine comes at you quick. It's right after the Super Bowl in February down in Indianapolis. And as much as I can't stand the combine, and I think it's paralysis by analysis, and it's way overblown in how much weight they put on it, if you don't have a good combine, guess what? You're probably going to sink in the draft. So Christian McCaffrey got it going. Well, you mentioned Cashman.
Don't forget that same season, I was trying to look that up to see if one of these two players, Leonard Fournette, did the same
thing.
From
LSU, exactly.
Same thing as McCaffrey did, both the same bowl season. And Jadeveon Clowney, I think a couple years before that, was talking about sitting out an entire season.
I've heard that. Well, Noah Fant from Iowa, tight end, is not going to play in the Hawkeye Bowl game. Also, another big name, Rashawn Gary, Michigan. And the kid from Ohio State, Bosa, got hurt midstream this season. Bosa said, I'm not coming back. I'll get ready for the NFL. But here's the flip side of it. I am hearing that some scouts and coaches think if a guy is going to shut it down that soon, they wonder about their competitiveness, that maybe there's another side to this.
Yeah. By the way, wild fall to the Flames, 2-1. Mikko Koivu didn't play. He could return for the San Jose game. He got banged up in Calgary by Mike Giordano. He got suspended and scored a goal today in St. Paul.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.